If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the Islamic laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, before we embark on our episode, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Tawid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the rules of impure substance based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Tawid. Sheikh Tawid, what is the criterion for the impurity of alcohol?
Well, the criterion is it is being intoxicating and originally a liquid, you know. If the alcohol comes from an intoxicant liquid, Yes. Then it becomes impure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So how is it possible to ascertain or find out whether a drink is intoxicant or not?
If the mukallaf or the duty-bound person is not sure, then the information provided by reliable specialists or experts will be sufficient, and he can actually trust that person, whether that liquid is intoxicating or not, or whether it is, let's say, it comes from a liquid origin or not.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone, let's say the producers or the manufacturers say that it is, for example, made of an intoxicant liquid,
mm-hmm.
that is enough. He can act according to what they claim to be.
Mm-hmm. I see. Shershabit, how about this question? You know, what's the rule regarding the soft drinks? You can find them available in the market, you know. And a lot of these soft drinks used in the country, such as Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and the like, with the knowledge that, you know, the ingredients or some of the ingredients, are imported.
Yes.
So it's probable that they may contain alcohol.
Well, they are generally considered to be pure and halal because they are found in the Muslim markets in large quantity. And we, of course, we also drink them, drink such Coca-Cola, such drinks which are available on the market. But generally speaking, they are halal, they are pure, except when the duty-bound person is sure that such drinks contain an alcohol that is intoxicating and originally liquid. But it's very difficult to ascertain that it is intoxicating and it is originally liquid, because we don't know what the procedure
mm-hmm.
It goes through. And there's no information available to ascertain that it is intoxicating, or because they are soft drink, you are not intoxicated. So generally speaking, you have to rest assured that it's not haram or it's not impure. You just can go and drink it.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, Sheikh Javid, in the non-Islamic countries, you know, you may purchase food from non-Muslims.
Yes.
Right. So is it necessary to investigate about their, for example, the hand of the salesperson, whether they has touched it or not, or whether they use, for example, alcohol in preparing that food?
It is not absolutely necessary to ask and investigate, because its life will be very difficult for you, like hell, if you try to find about everything, especially if you live in a country like India, where the majority of people living there are non-Muslims and they are atheists or Buddhists. It's very difficult to ascertain whether, for example, the food that you are going to eat has been touched by a Hindu non-Muslim or not, or whether there is any alcohol or not. And if there is alcohol, the alcohol is pure or impure. So it will be kind of extremely difficult. You are going to put yourself into some kind of undue hardship, the hardship that is intolerable. So it's not necessary to investigate at all.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and continue our program, Islam Class on IRIB English Radio. Stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go.
go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Mohanjad, hosting this program, and Shirta with our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the rules and regulations of impure substances based on fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, somebody asked us, I make atropine sulfate spray. Anka alcohol is an essential ingredient in its formulation. That is, if you don't add alcohol to the compound, it's not possible to prepare the spray. This spray is considered a counterweapon that can protect the Islamic forces from chemical weapons. Is it permissible to use alcohol in preparing medicines in the above-mentioned manner?
If the alcohol is intoxicating and originally liquid, then it is haram, and by obligatory precaution, it is impure as well. But to use it for making the medicine does not involve any problem, because the alcohol can be used for a lot of different purposes, not only for consumption. When it comes to consumption, to drinking, of course, you don't have to, you shouldn't drink such alcohol, because it's intoxicating, it's impure. But it can be used for many other purposes, which are which, of course, according to His Eminence, does not involve any problem.
Mm-hmm, I see. Somebody asked us, Sheikh Javid, it is several years that I'm suffering from the problem of obsessive doubting, and it has really been tormenting me.
Yes.
Day by day, this state is becoming more severe and has reached such a point that my whole life has been affected with doubt, mostly in relation to food and wet things. As a result, I'm unable to behave like ordinary people. When I enter a place, I remove my socks immediately because I think that they become wet by sweat and will become najas on coming into contact with najasa. I am even unable to sit on the prayer mat. And when I sit, I stand up immediately lest the minute fibers of the prayer mat, should stick to to my clothes, compelling me to clean them with water. Earlier, I was not like this, and now I feel embarrassed by my conduct, and I always long to see someone in my dream to put my questions to him and hope for a miracle to change my life, take me back to my previous state. Would you please, enlighten us with the rule related to my situation?
Well, this is a situation which is so common, and according to Islamic Sharia, all things are considered pure unless it has been pronounced as impure by the lawgiver, by the Sharia, or the legislator, and unless one is certain that that thing is actually impure. Of course, there are thousands of people around us who are suffering from a disease which is called OCD,
obsessive compulsive disorder. Yes,
and the religious authorities on different occasions have said that getting rid of obsession in such situation does not require any, let's say, miracles or any dream or something. Rather, it is the duty of the duty-bound person to set aside his personal inclination and, of course, give the benefit of the doubt to himself, because Islam is an easy religion, which means to make things easy for the duty-bound people, for the duty-bound individuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's always necessary for people who suffer from some sort of OCD to not pay attention to their doubts about halal and haram, or about purity or impurity. Rather, they have to pay no attention to their obsession. They have to disregard obsession with regard to najasa, with regard to practicing indifference and carelessness. And inshallah, this is the only way of course, to get rid of obsession. Being obsessive is not recommended. It's absolutely not good. The Islamic Sharia forbids us from being very much obsessive because it makes life very, very difficult for us. So we should always act like regular individual, like ordinary people around us, and we should give the benefit of the doubt to ourselves when it comes to najasa, when it comes to even, let's say, doubts about, you know, prayer and fasting and things like that.
I appreciate it, Sheikh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيط.